Okay, so with that though, there's other ones. Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Oh, so good.
I mean, they say it's a retelling of the Odyssey, and there are similarities that I can see.
Yeah.
But I always felt that that was sort of straining the definition of a retelling.
You know, fair.
It had sirens. It had a cyclops.
They're on a journey. What more do you want?
Just a reminder, this is a spoiler-heavy podcast. Different series that require a spoiler warning will be in the description. Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Gaming Theater Podcast. Today's episode is going to be about the weirdest retelling of stories. And so these are different stories that we have, and I'll explain more about what's going on with that in when we get closer to the episode. So we're closer to the start of the episode. But that being said, I have several guests with us who are going to help us out with this episode. My name is Leo. I am your host this evening, and I go by the moniker of Geek Scorpio. And over to my right is going to be...
Hi, my name is Dean Dane. I look a little bit different because my camera's further back. You can find me on Twitch. I'm an award-winning DM and a charity himbo. Yeah, we'll go with that. And you've probably heard my voice on GTP. Welcome back.
Oh, yeah. Now, also with that, over to their right is going to be...
Hey, I'm Rob. I am a student of game design.
All right. And with that, over to their right is going to be...
Hi, I'm Brandon, also called Tomato Man. I do a lot of stuff with video and audio engineering.
Oh, yeah. And they're fun stuff. With that all being said, let's go ahead and take a quick trip over to the Magical Merch Booth.
Whoa!
Here we are in the Magical Merch Booth. Now, today's Magical Merch Booth is, since we're coming to the end of the year, I wanted to just use this time to have a shout out and a thank you to all of our guests and all of our fans who've been listening to us this whole time and have been sticking with us for all these years. It's been an amazing show, and we've got so many different opportunities for different things, and we have other plans coming up for big things that are happening in the next year. And some of these we've already had works in the fire like earlier, and I can't wait to show these to you. But that being said, we thank you from the bottom of our heart for sticking with us for this series. It's amazing. I'm so glad to be here.
Keep listening and tune in next year.
Yes. Also, we're going to be at a couple of conventions next year.
Mm-hmm. Not the full listing, but I know there's one in the beginning of January. Yep. So where is that one?
That's going to be in Lincoln City, Oregon.
I really thought you were going to say Nebraska.
No, what? No, no.
That's a different Lincoln
City. Yeah.
Yes.
So to everybody there, there's a convention in Lincoln City,
Oregon.
Oregon. And we'll have links to the site and everything for that in the description. And thank you guys once again for listening to our show. And with that, well, back to the show.
Happy New Year.
Whoa! So here we are on today's episode, and what we're talking about is the weirdest retellings of stories and retellings of stories. Storylines is a whole different thing, but that's more individually based, but they'll pop up, but we'll get to that. So here's what we're talking about. When you have a story that's told from that's been around for a while, people will do a retelling of that story. Well, we've all heard of A Christmas Carol or the story of Icarus, you know, flying too close to the sun. Now we fast forward to that, and then some people will take an even clever way of rewriting that story, or just those clever routes of retelling that entire story becomes even crazier. So for some historians out there, if you know Broadway, one of the things in the 60s, in the late 60s, early 70s, or mid 70s, they had a thing where basically you would have to, they would perform a play, but it's always the nude version of the play. For some reason, it's the same play, but everyone's got to be naked for the cast. That's just a thing that happens.
Hold on.
And I didn't realize that until I watched a particular episode of Quantum Leap. And that was one of the things that happened in that episode.
I'm making sure I heard you right. Naked?
Yep, they all naked.
Huh. All right.
Well. It was the 70s. It was a weird...
It was a weird time, Leo. Yes, it was.
It was a simpler time.
It was a different time.
A less clothed time.
Yes. A better time, some would say. Not me, but some.
Well, I wasn't there, so I don't think it could have been nearly as good as now.
So... So what we're talking about is the weirder retelling. So this subject came to my mind when I stopped and was watching a couple of different things. And then I realized I watched one of my favorite retellings of The Wizard of Oz. You would think it'd be Wicked by this particular time of frame. But nay, my favorite retelling of The Wizard of Oz is a little post-apocalyptic film from the early 90s called The Six String Samurai. It is literally a broken down version of The Wizard of Oz. Dorothy is played by a samurai named Buddy Holly, who happens to also be a martial artist and a master at the six-string guitar.
But also, I don't know, it keeps going.
But
right?
Also, he's watching over a kid.
Oh,
and also, it's a post-apocalyptic wasteland.
I thought the kid was Dorothy, and then Buddy was supposed to be the scarecrow.
Yes, yes, yes. The kid was Dorothy, Buddy was the scarecrow, and Buddy's trying to get to... So, gotta do this weird plot line for this one. So here's how this movie starts. There's all this nuclear fallout in the 50s. For those who have seen Fallout, that's a thing. And it's easy to go with that route. However, in that storyline, Elvis Presley makes his way to Las Vegas, and Las Vegas becomes the last big sanctuary of that. And so Elvis Presley, who goes from being the rock and roll king to being a literal king. And then he passes away. But when he passes away, he will advocate, the throne gets advocated to somebody who both represents Elvis Presley, of being a king of rock and roll and having a background in martial arts. That is not, hearsay. He actually has a black belt in martial arts. He's an expert in karate.
I was going to say, I think it was actually karate, if I remember right.
Yep.
So between, singing some classics that he created and eating peanut butter and banana sandwiches, he was kicking ass.
Yep. He has a background in martial arts, and he also spent time in the military.
I do find it a bit funny that as long as humankind has enjoyed writing stories, we've also enjoyed, I'm going to say, remixing, though the term is obviously a lot newer than the stories themselves. There were historically a lot of people who told retellings with slight differences of like the Homer plays or writings,
yeah.
Whatever you want to call those, the epics that Homer wrote. There were retellings of those. Gilgamesh was often remixed, being
constantly.
One of, constantly, very much so. So I do find it kind of interesting that as long as there have been stories, there have also been people being like, what if Gilgamesh were a dog or whatever?
Well, and like, keep in mind that for most of human history, we didn't have writing. We think
very true.
Human history is like the leftover written records, but the truth is, the vast majority of human history was before that, so we don't have records of that.
100%.
So, how do you pass on knowledge to the next generation? You retell stories. And just by its very nature, things are going to change as you're retelling them.
Yeah, Rob tells me a story, and I go to tell it to Leo, and I'm like, I think he said it was a Tuesday, but it might have been a Wednesday. I don't know. I'm really kind of fuzzy on the details. It's probably not important. And Leo then goes to Tomato Man, and he's like, so it was a Friday, right? I mean, if you've ever played a game of telephone, it's hard enough keeping a story straight, much less something as epic as a verbally passed down story, as Rob mentioned. So, yeah, absolutely. These things do change and grow over time.
Just remember, when it comes to anthropology, the difference between history and prehistory is if they wrote it down once.
True.
So do we count pictures?
No. They specifically, it has to be a written language for that.
Well then.
So that's why Gilgamesh is one of the oldest stories on that we classify, because that one was written down for that.
Sucks to be Egyptian.
I think...
No, so hieroglyphics is still a language, so they still count that.
No! They're pictures!
You know what? English letters are also just pictures. It's just pictures that we associate with specific sounds.
Yeah.
But
paint carvings on the walls that have little stick figure dudes on that, like in the Neanderthal caves, they don't count as writing. So anyway, but yeah, what we're talking about, yeah, this little kid who's an orphan kid who's trying to make his way to Las Vegas. The Las Vegas is now the Emerald City, but also you have, Buddy Holly is basically the guy, it's mostly the Scarecrow, but yeah, he's protecting him meanwhile, There's this guitar reeling symbol of death coming after him and taking out all these other guitar players to make sure that they don't make it to the Grand City. And yeah, you know, that's your Wicked Witch right there. But also, there's at some point he deals with the remnants of the Russian military.
Oh, so like Goku.
Yeah. It just happens.
So, speaking of Goku, probably the most famous retelling would be Dragon Ball for Journey to the West.
What about Saiyuki? That had an anime.
And I mean, it also got a PlayStation game, but true. I digress.
No, you're absolutely true, right? A lot of people don't realize that Son Goku is based on the character of, Son Wukong.
Son Wukong, yep. Yeah. I could never pronounce the names, but Oolong is just legitimately ripped from the story. There is a man with a pig head.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Are you guys familiar with the One Punch Man mangaka?
Yeah.
I'm familiar with the fact that he can't draw.
Oh, hey, look, he tries. Okay. I like his work. He's been working on a original anime project. I saw a music video called Zayuki. From Yusuke Murata is the guy who's doing it. And yeah. He's known for One Punch Man, of course. That's why I bring that up. But it's like an anime music video that's a retelling of Journey to the West. And so you've got the Kappa dragon guy. You've got, the pig person. You've got Sun Wukong, of course, who's doing most of the action. And then you've got the priest who's having to go along with them. But it is vastly different than both Dragon Ball and then even Saiyuki, right? As to Brandon's point, there are a lot of these stories that are remixed even within the same time period that are told from vastly different lenses.
Well, and sometimes they evolve into their own thing. I mean, for God's sakes, Dragon Ball becoming Dragon Ball 2 or Z. I mean, it's just there's no connection anymore.
Not at all.
Did we lose the plot on this one?
I mean, technically, yes. It evolved.
I was going to say, he built his own plot off of the back of it, technically.
It Dragon Ball evolutioned.
How dare you bring that into this house?
Bro, you brought that into three houses that are not yours.
It took a grand tour. Actually,
I have told my wife for 10 years, you're not allowed to watch that movie.
I own it.
Why not? Look. Don't talk to me. I own it too. It's not the point. Look, man, I bought every live action video game film that's out there at this point. And so you don't put it past me to own other terrible things.
A local DVD place was going out of business, I bought it for a dollar and I still probably overpaid for it, if I'm being real. Dude,
you paid a dollar for it? Look, I paid more than you. I'm sorry. For myself.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry too.
Damn it, Fuller. That's the name of the bully at his high school. Okay.
But yeah, so it just kind of depends on which one you're watching. These things do change and evolve very much so. If you look at Romeo and Juliet being a prime example, there is a 90s, which is technically a remake. Leo, I know we're not supposed to be talking about those, but it's so vastly different.
Yeah, it's so vastly different it counts for this one.
Yeah.
A remake would be something a little it's different.
Yeah.
Because it's
Evil Dead.
When we're talking about retelling, the weirdest retelling of the storylines. Mm-hmm.
Reimaginings count.
Or reimagining for it would be probably a better word. So what it does is that it takes that storyline and just turns it on, puts a spin on it so wacky that nobody really thinks of doing it that way.
What if it were modern day and they had pew-pews?
Yes.
Now, I will say this, if we had the pew-pews, what should we change the language? No.
Hand me my longsword, ho.
Yeah.
I mean, it falls into West Side Story, too.
Yeah,
I mean,
true. What if they danced?
Oh, yeah. What if instead of fighting, we danced? But what if we did both capoeira?
True.
So we went from Romeo and Juliet to Tekken, Eddie Gordo.
Eddie Gordo would have killed it in West Side Story.
Oh, God, yeah. No, yeah. He would have won. He would have brought peace.
Jet, you were always a jet.
But the sharks, yo.
True.
True. But yeah, so these are the wackier retellings for it. Simply having a reboot isn't the same thing.
Yeah.
Because a reboot typically will be in the same air vein of the original show.
So it's kind of like, you know, Seven Samurai versus Samurai Seven, the anime, versus yep. Magnificent Seven, the popular cowboy film. All similar story beats, similar type of characters, right? You've got the
same
leader.
Same concept, but you're different, right, exactly. Execution.
100%. Vastly different execution. Even when, you know, they're still dealing with samurai in two of the three that we've mentioned.
Yeah. But, like, going from samurai to, it's a Western, but it's also the Seven Samurai.
Yeah.
That's a wild take retelling.
What even from, you know, Seven Samurai, Samurai Seven, Seven, man, fuck.
Yeah.
Seven Samurai to Samurai Seven, where it's like, yeah, this is now the future and there are robots. Don't worry about it.
And one of the samurai is a robot.
True. Don't worry about it. Well, and I thought that was kind of a, I mean, just to go on a quick aside, shout out to you, Samurai Seven fans. But as a quick aside, I think it's really cool that Kikucho is kind of showcased that way, right? Because he's not in the original film. He's not a samurai. He's, spoiler alert, he's lying about being a samurai. And so the fact that I have like someone so othered, right, so different, he's not a human, and they know that, I think is really kind of neat.
Mm-hmm. And that kind of plays into like the other elements of the film, like how one of them is an outsider, not just in that he wasn't a samurai, but you've also got the, oh, like in Magnificent Seven, how you have the Oriental Man. I don't remember his name in that movie for the life of me, even though they've remade it too. Or Denzel Washington's character. So you've got like the racial differential there, but in this case, it's technically a species differential.
Yeah, it's still kind of showcasing that this person is in fact an outsider. And I know this is not a retrospective about this movie, but it's one of my favorites, so deal with it.
It's a classic. If you're paying attention to this podcast, it's brought up more than once.
What? I don't ever talk about it.
Neither have I.
I have.
It's true. It's been all Leo. but no, like, I do find it very interesting that, like, this is three distinct different ways of showcasing, you know, the otherness of this character, where, like, he's a samurai, or he's a fake samurai who has fake samurai papers in the original. He's a robot man, so not human, in the anime. And, you know, he is a completely different, from a different location, geographic location, in the Western, thus making them in each instance an other. So this is kind of an example, a really good example, I think, of how these stories do change and adapt depending on who's writing them, right? Even amongst two Japanese creators, where being Seven Samurai and Samurai Seven, God, that's going to screw me up every time. you get two different takes because they're from the same place doesn't mean they write the same type of story. So I think there's a lot of depth to telling different stories and telling the same story in different ways. I think that's very fascinating.
Well, and there's a PS2 game too that's like different even from the Samurai 7. It's like, I think it's actually Seven Samurai 20XX.
Yes.
So it's like there's a fourth one there and it's in a different medium altogether. I mean, but it's the same concept, the same general idea, just, again, radically different execution.
Very much so.
It moving from medium to medium does not count as a weird retelling. That's just a medium switch.
True.
For that one, especially for some cases. So, for example, Supernatural, I think around season 3 or 4, they came out with an anime for themselves. And it was seventh episode anime.
It wasn't that set between a couple of seasons, so it could be canon.
It was set up in a separate, like, semi-separate canon on that. It's like, but it is supposedly between a couple of seasons because it's after season 1, but somewhere between 1 and 2. It's weird.
Yeah. Just to clarify too, when I talk about that PS2 game, it's like it wasn't just medium switching. It wasn't just going from one type of media to another. I mean, the 20XX, it was basically their own way of doing Samurai 7, but closer to Seven Samurai, but also sci-fi future. So, I mean, it's just a different person's take on the same idea from that. Anyway, I'm going to digress and walk away from that because I'm just going to talk in a circle.
That's fine. Oh, confusing. To let you know the name of that character, it was Billy Rocks. That's the... Now, Billy Rock, which is funny,
because
Billy Rocks' character is a knife thrower. And the knife thrower on there exists because he was in the original Magnificent Seven as the expert fighter. But that is not the one in Seven Samurai. It's a different samurai on there. But just, I think, I can't remember who it was. But it represented, like, this the a highly skilled samurai of one of the seven.
As the expert, yeah.
As the expert, and so like he's so such an expert that he just uses knives, and that's what was this thing.
Four Magnificent Seven.
Okay, so with that though, there's other ones. Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Oh, so good.
I mean, they say it's a retelling of the Odyssey, and there are similarities that I can see.
Yeah,
but I always felt that was sort of straining the definition of a retelling.
You know, fair.
It had sirens. It had a cyclops.
They're on a journey. What more do you want?
This almost feels more like appropriation than adaptation.
I don't think Rob's a Dapper Dan man. That's just all I'm saying.
No, and I love the film. I really did. It was absolutely fantastic. And I've never actually read The Odyssey, so I really don't have any particular emotional attachment to it.
Oh.
What about Wishbone's Odyssey? Like, did you not watch those special episodes of Wishbone? It was a two-parter, because The Odyssey is a long story.
It is.
Actually, The Odyssey has gotten remade a lot.
Yeah, Rob, he was a dog. How dare you?
It's actively being remade right now, isn't it? Isn't Christopher Nolan making
Actually,
The Odyssey?
Yes, Christopher Nolan's coming out with a movie on The Odyssey.
Wishbone's doing his best. He doesn't have thumbs, okay? I'm sorry it wasn't up to your standards.
I said, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou might not be a retelling. I didn't say squat about Wishbone.
Yeah, that's true. Wishbone, he does the work. He does the work.
No, but I mean, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou really was, it was fantastic.
Yes.
Even if it was very different from the source material. It was fantastic, and it still told a great story with mostly the same beats.
Yeah.
You take enough of the beats and we're just kind of, honestly, I had to look this up, but just as a whim, and I found out that the director and writer did that. You ever see, it's a 70s movie called The Warriors?
Come Warriors. Out to play!
Yeah. So that's actually an old Greek epic.
Really?
That was remade in the 70s.
I love The Warriors.
But the PS2 wasn't out in the 70s. I love that game.
Oh, I think he's talking about Dynasty Warriors, Brandon.
Wait, which one? Number one, the fighting game, or number two, Onward, the hack and slash from hell?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know enough about the romancing of the Three Kingdoms, but I'm pretty certain that's how it goes down, right?
I could help you with that.
Oh, geez, yes, you could. And I would be there for it. In fact, let's do long plays. Dane, you and I, we're going to go through every single Dynasty Warriors game.
And I don't then, hate this.
And then we're going to play all of the Romancing of the Three Kingdoms games. And then we're going to read Romancing of the Three Kingdoms. And then we'll probably be dead because we're never going to be able to finish this.
I've read Romance of the Three Kingdoms. Good book. Well, good book if you're someone like me. Terrible book if you're a normal person.
Dane.
No offense to anyone who's also read it and been like, I'm a normal person. Screw you, D and Dane.
We misunderstand. I meant back to back, sir. Are going to die.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm okay with that. Look, I have lived, as an aside, I have lived my life wishing to have a Peach Garden moment where three brothers of mine, or myself and two brothers, can stand together and go, hey, what if we all died on the same day at the same time? Wouldn't that be nutty? Anyway, let's go unite China. Like, that sounds great to me. Goals. But we then have to play the Warriors video game, which I'm being told is then based on an ancient Greek story. Right, Leo?
I have both and all of it. but yeah, no, it's an ancient Greek story. It's called, I'm hoping I'm pronouncing this right, Anabasis. It's by Xenophon. And so what it is that it's about a group of soldiers that get separated, and they have to travel through all these enemy territories to get home safely. And that's the entire plot of Warriors, is that they have to, except you replace it with
my God,
fun street gangs to go from the one side of New York to make your way to Coney Island.
That's incredible. I've never noticed that before.
No, to be fair, I never noticed that was a story until I was like, I swear I've heard of this before. I might be nuts.
That's still cool.
But yeah, so like, that's a weird retelling for that on that.
One of my favorite retellings, though, honestly, Treasure Planet.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's so easy to forget, which is unfortunate because it's so good.
It's the best movie no one ever remembers.
Yeah.
Although I don't love it as much as Muppet Treasure Island, if I'm being real with y'all.
So,
if I'm being like a hundo P. I'm sorry.
You know what's another movie that everyone forgets is awesome?
Titan A.
That too. Cats Don't Dance.
True.
But Cat's Out Dance is not, I don't think that's a remake.
It's not, retelling. But it, well, I mean, I guess you could argue that it's a retelling of a classic underdog story, but
it's my point was just Cats, Leo, obviously.
My point was more about the comparison to Treasure Planet, and no one remembers the damn movie, even though it's awesome.
Oh, no, that's true. I remember it because Scott Bakula's in it.
That's true.
I remember.
Do you think this is the jump he finally makes it home?
Yeah, maybe.
It's like Treasure Planet. Like, you could just say, you know, this is Treasure Island except set in space, but there really are some pretty significant differences.
Yes.
Mainly with the main character, Jim Hawkins. He's a totally different character in Treasure Planet. You know, Treasure Island, he's a kid who's kind of enamored with adventure stories. And by the end of the story, he is actually haunted by his experience. In Treasure Planet, he's a troubled teen who finds a future after having gotten through a pirate attack. And it's just like, it's such a completely different story, and yet the same story.
Yes.
I guess a case of where the real draw is the theming more than the story itself.
Sometimes that's the case. I mean, the Muppets have made a career out of that one.
Yeah.
We're about due for another Muppet classic, to be honest.
I would love a Muppet remake of any, like, of those really good classic now in public domain stories.
What do y'all think about Muppet Dracula?
Oh, that'd be hilarious. I would see it.
I was going to suggest Muppet Steamboat Willie.
Technically viable, but I don't think they'll do it. Look, we don't mess with the mouse. We've mentioned that before. I understand it's not the mouses anymore, but careful. I still feel
I'll
like
cut they... for you.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, no, I said.
I guess kind of speaking on Dracula, right?
Yuck.
That story and the characters surrounding it have been utilized and remixed and redone, I mean, almost to death, right? Ad nauseum, I would say. In that, like, you've got Van Helsing, right? And in some things, he's a monster hunter. And in others, he's just, like, a kooky old man.
I'm halfway through the book. He is a kooky old man who just happens to be, like, I know everything there is to know about this guy.
He's not a monster hunter, really. He just knows stuff. He's a nerd.
He is Hugh Jackman, who's actually Gabriel the Fallen Angel that is a werewolf.
Yeah, and he's not even in Helsing Abridged, so I don't really know.
Or Ultimate,
yeah. I mean, I said the right one.
You did, though.
But no, you know, like, you know, we see Alucard in Castlevania. We see Dracula in Castlevania. But we see these characters show up. We don't oftentimes see, you know, the same story necessarily remade, right? Dracula has sort of a flexibility where, like, you can retell the story of Dracula. That's fine. Or you just put him in stuff and put a couple other characters from there in there, and it's probably fine.
There was an episode I might do later down, possibly for next Halloween, which is a basically Castlevania and its origins in classic horror films. Because
Universal Monster Movies, the game.
That's what it started as.
That is exactly what it is.
It was literally, this guy was like, I want to put all these classic horror characters in a game. And they were like, all right, you got to make me something. And they're all there. Frankenstein's one of your bosses. The mummy. I think in the first game, there's a Yeti in there. They have a giant bat, but I can't get... But that's just a really, really big bat.
There's a Medusa.
But then
head.
Also, Dracula is at the end.
Spoilers.
I mean,
for every single Castlevania game ever.
Really hid that, though, that it was based on those Universal Monsters thing. I mean, if you pay attention, they have like a film strip go in most of those early NES games.
Yeah, and that was the point for that.
Yeah, and it was awesome. I'm not complaining.
Mm-hmm. And so, like, the thing with that is that it is kind of a retelling of the story of Dracula.
Yeah.
And how they retell it. And they do little key things on it. One of my favorite things in Castlevania that they do is Dracula is considered the master of, is an immortal. So Dracula is the final boss, but because he's the immortal, the guy you have to defeat before Dracula is always Death.
Yeah.
Because Death can't even take him.
Well, Death is also the more, statistically, from all the Castlevanias, is the more difficult fight.
So, somehow, Dracula returned.
Mm-hmm.
The sickles piss me off every time.
But no, so they can do that, and it's a very unique way of doing that. And now we have Dracula's or Castlevania as a Netflix series, which is amazing.
Oh, so yeah. Good. You must be the Belmont.
Mm-hmm. But Dracula's original story is, it's not that action-packed, but it is a good mystery.
It's a great story, right? But yeah, there's not like really a whole lot of sword fighting and throwing of what weapons and items, and you know, there's a little bit of like hunting the beast. They do mm-hmm. that quite a bit, where they're trying to track Dracula down. You know, they're either going to Transylvania to the New World, or from the New World back to Transylvania. But yeah, very often not a whole lot of action. You know, Dracula and Renfield don't get into a sword fight before he turns him into a familiar, right? At least not in most interpretations.
Not in the original
of no. Dracula.
Honestly, and so like people get this wrong about Dracula a lot. It's, oh, we're making a remake of the Dracula story. What you're technically doing is making a remake of a retelling of Dracula's story, because the original retelling was a play to shorten that down, and that's the one that people go with. Kind of like with Frankenstein, where they have the lightning on it. At no point in the book of Frankenstein is lightning even mentioned. As they just know he brought something back from the dead, and he never, and it's important to know this, he never tells anybody how he did.
Yeah.
Yeah, they show you in the films and stuff, and they appropriate it with an immense amount of power, something that is akin to godlike power, and the only thing that was really conceivable like that is a bolt of lightning, so that's where the concept yeah. is.
And we accept that concept, but it's funny because what will happen is things come from the retelling that mm-hmm. get retold, but not in the original. So, like, for example, there's, like, you know, classic Dr. Frankenstein going, it's alive, it's alive, and nope. just going off the tails. That is because of the actor who just did it on the line there, yeah. and now we reuse that constantly.
Or that Igor was never thing.
Yeah, similar yeah. to a lot of Bela Lugosi's tics as well, playing Dracula. Mm-hmm. A lot of the Draculisms came from his performance, right? Mm-hmm. I do find it interesting, kind of speaking of the remix culture or the changing of stories over time, and through different iterations, right? You know, we didn't really have a concept, or at least not one that was very well written down or studied for hell, for the Judeo-Christian hell, until yeah. Dante. And then Dante was like, nah, man, there's layers.
It's an ogre.
Like, it's like onions, right?
God, I love onions.
And it's cold. Like, because, you know, before, typically speaking, historically, it was like, oh, well, hell is just the absence of God, right? It's just mm-hmm. being removed from the divine presence of God. And he was like, nah, it's cold. There's layers. There's a bunch of different stuff. I was there once in a dream.
I was there. It's cold.
Me and Homer, we hang out there sometimes.
Well, Dracula also has another thing appropriated that, or not necessarily appropriated, but an adjustment that people often don't remember is that now he could go out in the sun. Nosferatu yeah. was the first time they ever introduced the concept of the creature of the night, where he fades away in the sunlight. And that was a German adaptation that they thought was legally distinct enough. And we're told, no, it is not. So it's technically went from being a film release to being an illegal film for a while because of that.
Has anyone here seen the new Nosferatu?
No, yeah. I actually want to, but I can't make time for anything anymore.
I haven't seen it. I just want to know why Sexy Man got the mustache.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I just want to know why Sexy Vampire got the mustache. What's up with that?
With Dante's Inferno and with the bottom of hell being cold, yeah. it just reminds me of this joke that I have, which is that I read off the internet. That somewhere goes, okay, you're gonna go to hell, and mostly for cheating on your science tests. You're gonna be at the bottom. Oh, that's the coldest. That's the hottest part. No, that's not how thermodynamics work.
Yeah, true.
Heat rises. You would know that if you didn't keep cheating on your science tests.
What is it? Endothermic versus exothermic?
When hell freezes over, man.
It's already there. Yeah.
Exactly. Been there, done that.
Yeah, so I do find it very interesting that, like, as stories are retold and as things are kind of, you know, the tradition of storytelling is continued, that we do sometimes lose important bits along the way, but also there are some things that we gain that just kind of carry through. This is a bit anecdotal, but it is relevant, I promise. There's a game called Telestrations where you start out with a word, and then you have to draw that word. You pass it to your left or your right, and then the person gets to read, or gets to see your drawing, and then has to guess what the word is, and so on and so forth. So the next person draws, then the next person reads. So you're kind of like trying to, it's basically like a game of telephone, but through the use of drawing. And it is very, very interesting to me. Some of the things that do stick from start to finish versus some of the things that go completely off the rail right away that make perfect sense to you. You know, you draw a horse in shoes for horseshoes, and you know, you understand what you mean, but someone's like horse feet. And then it goes from there. I find it very interesting. The things that stick around, you know, so like Dracula and Sunlight, that is, I think at this point, more of his mythos and more of his story than it never was not. Right.
Yeah.
Everyone knows Dracula Sunlight. Mm-mm. That's why Blade's so cool. He a daywalker.
I hate familiar.
Well, and I mean, like that's such an important part of the Dracula mythos at that point, where if you don't do it, you're a hack.
Yeah.
If instead of bursting into flames in sunlight, your Dracula sparkles. True. I'm sorry, we can't accept that.
Yeah.
Alternatively, too, Blade Trinity, Dracula is back and he can walk around in the whatever, and everyone's like, what?
He's a daywalker now. It's crazy.
Yeah, well, because the diluting of his power is what it was that causes them to erupt in daylight or something. I don't remember. I haven't watched that movie in nearly 20 years.
I love Deadpool in that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's the best Deadpool movie.
Brandon's opinions are not relative for the rest of GTP. I need to state that right now.
So I know, this disclosure. I know we've got the 13th Warrior for Beowulf.
Look, I do make jokes, man.
I do want to talk about that as a good retelling of Beowulf. But I do need to know if the fact that Grendel's hot in one of the versions of Beowulf counts as a remake. And yes. By hot, I don't mean that I found her necessarily attractive, but that she was seen as being conventionally attractive and mostly naked there, which was a selling point for the movie for a lot of people in my day and age.
So that doesn't disqualify it.
Okay.
That you can... That is your mileage may vary on whether or not them be, how do I want to put this to be nice, them being ugly, if it's not the crux of the storyline or it doesn't affect the crux of the storyline, it shouldn't really be that big.
I mean, they did make some changes to the storyline, right? Like in that Grendel like seduces Beowulf, and you know, there's so in the original story of Beowulf, there are some the dragon is his own downfall and it's his own doing, right? That is something that, right. That does happen to Beowulf because of his own actions. But Grendel was always seen, at least from my recollection of reading it, as this sort of monstrous entity who ripped people's heads off, who was not seen as comely or fetching in any sort of way, shape, or form. And it is sort of like this almost, I don't want to say Faustian bargain, but it's sort of like a double-edged sword, right? That he agrees to do to save his people, which then of course comes back to bite him when the dragon shows back up in the retelling with Angelina Jolie. It is seen much more like, oh, well, he can't deny her beauty. And, you know, look at Grendel. She's so hot though. Why wouldn't you want to make a deal with this proverbial devil?
So it doesn't take like for a another case for that is what was it? Why can't I think Paradise Lost, where you have probably the original origins of super sexy devil.
Not wrong.
And so like that's just a take for that, but it doesn't change anything with the story of on Paradise Lost and where that's going with that.
Yeah,
but we do have super sexy devil.
You know what I mean, right? Yeah, and so like you know. It doesn't change too much of what Beowulf is doing, right? The same conceptual storytelling is there. Man goes fight monster. Man, quote unquote, defeats monster, though in a different way in this movie than in the traditional way. Man becomes king. Man falls to his own doom based around his own actions or inactions therein, right? So the same storyline is conceptually there. But they've sort of changed the dressing a little bit, not as much as they did with like the Romeo and Juliet live action modern day take, but it was kind of like, I mean, honestly, I think the majority of that movie that was changed was what if Grendel were hot?
I mean, you could get away with it. So back in the 90s, there was a movie called Bedazzled, or Yeah, Bedazzled. Oh. Which is a remake of a movie.
With Brendan Fraser, right?
Yeah, that's the one with Brendan Fraser and Elizabeth Hurley. Super hot, still the devil. That's true. A tale of Faust. It's a retelling of the tale of Faust.
That's true.
And so, like, yeah, that's just the... You can get away with that if it's as long as it doesn't, like, detract from the, I guess, the main tale of yore for it.
Fair enough. So 13th Warrior, the better telling of... So sorry to all you Beowulf fans. No hot Grendel in 13th Warrior. I'm very sad to report, but great retelling, in my opinion. Obviously, there are some changes, right? The I always want to... I don't remember their name. The clan, the cave folk. I want to call them the Clan of the Cave Bear because they've got bear iconography, but that's a book, so like it's not 100%, right? My memory's a little bit foggy on it. Mm-hmm. I don't remember what they call them, but obviously quite a departure from the Beowulf story, from the Beowulf legend, in that not only do you have a monster of sorts, but it is a man-made, man-directed, natural predator, right? You don't have this sort of mythical figure of Grendel. You have this bear, spoiler alert, who is munching on all of these Viking warriors. Enter the 13th warrior, who is not a Viking, who is from a place far, far away, but who is been brought here to sort of chronicle and learn and teach maybe how to defeat this entity, right? Eventually, right? When he first starts out, he's not there to teach or to defend. They actually make fun of him quite heavily, but
he's not as good at it.
No, because, I mean, his sword is too heavy and his armor is too entrapping. And, you know, he's not from the same place. So, obviously, the tools and equipment he was used to are not the same. But I love the idea of changing, of telling a Beowulf story, or telling any story, but kind of changing major plot points by removing the supernatural and replacing them with something a little bit more realistic. I love a good fantasy story. I love a good, you know, supernatural villain. Grendel is incredible in the original Beowulf, but making him a bear is really interesting. And then making it not a bear, it's actually people dressed up as bears. I don't know. It subverted my expectations, I guess. And I like that.
Oh yeah. No, it was super cool. I do love checking out that movie. It's one of my favorite of the Antonio Banderas films, I'll be honest.
Yeah, so good.
Not my favorite. That's Desperado. But that is the lone gunman. But that's more of a trope than anything else. But yeah, so like these retellings just happen on that. And there's not really a... Let me rephrase. So there can be bad retellings for that. But if handled well, it's at least a fun retelling.
I agree. I absolutely agree. So, Rob, as a game designer, right, to get your perspective on it, since you're an expert in these things, when you're going about telling a story, right, obviously I know that a lot of things are based around other things that have already inspired, right? So, you know, like, Tolkien wasn't the first person to do fairy stories or to do elves or to do dwarves, right? Obviously, he took that from someplace. But when you're setting out to, like, design a game with a story in mind, do you find that you oftentimes do lean on stories you're comfortable or familiar with, or do you start out like in a different vein?
Here's the thing. Whether you mean to or not, anytime you make a new story, you will be basing it off of stories that you've heard before.
Fair.
You know, you might be intending to make the story that nobody's ever heard before, but the fact is there's nothing new under the sun.
That's why we have to go into the sun. Wait.
I've always felt it's better to simply lean into that.
Okay.
Because what's going to happen when you're trying to avoid, you know, using something for a previous story, trying to avoid drawing from that? There's a reason those stories are popular and have stuck with you, and it's because they're good. So if you're trying to avoid that, what you're actually trying to do is create a bad story.
Interesting.
And there's exceptions to that, of course. You know, sometimes someone comes out with something that really is, you know, totally new and novel and no one's ever seen before. But in most cases, it's actually just they took inspiration from something that nobody remembers.
I think so, like, a good case for that one, at least it's one of my favorites. Not the book, but the movie Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Yeah.
In order to make it, right, who's the director of that film, in order to make it work the way he wanted to, he used action sequence and combat in the same way that that rom-coms would use background music.
Yeah.
And so, like, the more exciting of the thing, the moment, this is how we're going to do it, just like a rom-com, except I'm replacing music with fight scenes.
Honestly, some of the dialogue from the movie is very pithy, and it scratches an itch, absolutely. But I think that's very interesting, that, you know, now that you've said that, that's 100% what he's done, and I can see that now.
Mm. Yeah, Edgar Wright's one of my favorite directors of all time, and if you know his stuff, it's fun and very, very energetic.
Yeah.
But, like, Rob's right. You guys are right. You can't, like, think of it doing it or avoid it. Like, Helldivers 2 and Helldivers itself, it's basically Starship Troopers. And Starship Troopers isn't even the first science fiction story we have with tons of bugs attacking a thing for it.
Right. And, I mean, I feel like if we look at things historically, you can go back to any unwinnable battle, right? But Thermopylae is one that a lot of people typically tend to point to, right? The 300 standing against a legion, which is kind of, you know, a small group of people defending an area versus a large group of beings, humans in this case, but bugs mayhaps. So that's a fair point, you know, and I do think that it is hard, right? I mean, I think that originality is something that is inherent to humans in that we had to create something somehow, right? But I do think that in this day and age, as things continue and the internet has widened our view, right? It does make things a little bit more difficult to create something new, original, fresh, novel, whatever word you want to use for it. I don't know that I philosophically agree that we can't make anything new, but I think it is a Herculean undertaking, to use a turn of phrase, for sure.
I think that would be a better case for that.
Well, it's hard. Bear in mind, I'm a UI UX designer first and foremost, not a narrative designer. So I'm more focused on, you know, making sure that your menus are working properly.
Thank you. Thing is,
creativity in there is often a hindrance.
Sure. I mean, that's fair.
You actually don't want to create a new type of menu that nobody's ever seen before, because then nobody will know how to use it.
Well, I mean, to kind of use a sophomoric example, right? I feel like controller design is kind of that way as well, where everyone for a while was attempting to sort of reinvent the wheel every single time. And some of them were successful, and others much less so. So I think that's a fair point, right? Like, it makes sense that when you are creating something like a menu or a UI experience, you don't necessarily want to reinvent the wheel, because you want people to be familiar with what you're trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, with UI specifically, I don't want you spending a lot of time and effort trying to figure out the menu system, because that's taking away from the time and effort you should be spending focusing on the gameplay. Yeah. Or on the story in the game. And so it's kind of the same thing if the story of the game isn't what the focus of the game is, don't bother being original. Take something that's been done before, you know, tweak it a little bit so that you're not breaking any copyright laws. And then put your focus into the gameplay.
You know, that's a fair point, right? Like, I mean, and maybe I'm about to piss off a bunch of people. I mean, this is a compliment, but like Call of Duty, Battlefield, Doom, you know, Medal of Honor and Wolfenstein, ostensibly the same game with different colors of paint and coding and different things thrown in there, right? Sometimes you're fighting the Mecha Mustache Man, and other times you're fighting the real Mustache Man, or what have you. But I think that's an absolutely fair point, right? These stories don't need to be that different. You're fighting demons in one, you're fighting Nazis in the other. But you're still shooting them with different myriad versions of guns, right?
Yeah, and I mean, like, and that's not just for video games, that is for stories, you know, kind of what we're talking about retellings of stories. There's a thing, I'm sorry, I'm looking it up now to make sure I got the name right, but it's like an index of the types of folk tales that there are in the world. And it's basically, you know, here's a list of, I don't know, 100 or so different stories. And the names change across cultures, but they are basically the same story.
Yeah.
Here's the stock character you're going to have as part of this story. Here's the stock villain. here's the three story beats that you hit or whatever.
Sure.
And there are changes depending on when and where it's from, but they are ultimately the same type of story. And this index exists because there are so many similar stories.
Yeah.
And like, and that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. People like the familiar.
Yeah.
And very when true. You take something familiar and you tweak it just a little bit, that makes it so much more interesting.
What if Dracula hated sunlight? What do you guys think?
Oh, he already hates sunlight.
Dang it.
What if Dracula loved sunlight?
My God. Couldn't
experience it.
Backwards Dracula.
What if Dracula were a plant? Plant killer.
Plant killer. What if Dracula, but also like a yeah, Frankenstein?
Yeah. A Dracula Frankenstein? Franken Dracula.
I am 90% certain there was a movie made about Frankenstein who was also a Dracula sometime in like the 60s or something like that. I'd be willing to put money down on that we could find that movie.
Yeah, well, I bet it exists for sure.
Yeah. If Jason Voorhees can go into space, okay, we can find
it. But to be fair, to quote the poster for Dracula 3000, in space, there is no sunlight.
In space, there's nothing but sunlight.
Nope.
But
sunlight. Nope. It's the complete...
Nope. Not according to Dracula 3000.
You don't even have an atmosphere to make it less painful.
Nope. In space, there is no sunlight. Look, they're movie writers, not
it's scientists. Dracula. There's no room for science here.
Oh no, sorry. I always screw it up. Apologies. It's in space, the sun never rises.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. No, it's just there, guys.
Which, yeah, because it's just around all the time.
Imagine if you were a vampire, right? You got into space.
There's no sun.
Only to realize that's all sun. I don't think you understand how big the sun is.
It never rises, so you're fine. It's eternal night up there, right? Totally. Speaking of Dracula, Dracula in space.
In the Apollo program, you know, the one that we know, which was one of the earliest things of going into space, they have sun shields. They get too much sun.
Yeah. But
it's a lot of sun.
Well, that's because they're going to space. They're not in space yet. Because in space, the sun never rises. Coolio told me so. He was in that movie.
But yeah, sometimes you have these weird retellings. You've replaced a lot of labs and such. You'll be surprised how many Night of Living Dead is remade. Like, Resident Evil was Night of Living Dead. That's all that is. And then you have Dino Crisis, which is Resident Evil, but with dinosaurs.
Okay, I'm getting conflicting reports. I'm so sorry to go back to Dracula 3000. I never left it. I know you did. There is a widescreen digital surround sound version of the film that says in space there is no daylight.
That's...
I know. I'm sorry. I thought we were out. I made my correction and was like, this makes sense. And, you know, in space the sun never rises. Sure. Okay. Nope. In space there is no daylight.
Okay, so I mean, we've been trying to focus, I think, on retellings that are good.
Yeah.
And this sort of highlights the fact that that's not always the case. Yeah. I've never seen Dracula 3000 from that tagline alone. I can tell you it's a bad show.
It's so bad. Oh my God, it's so funny though. Like Dracula is legitimately just like Dracula. He wears a collar. He wears a cape. He just looks like a Dracula. And then he bites some people, including, spoiler alert, Coolio. And then Coolio becomes, you know, a Dracula, and he starts biting people. And it's of its time.
Of its...
It's one time. Of the films of all time.
I think... The Core has got the record for most scientifically inaccurate movie of all time.
This is, I mean, well, it depends. Do we count Dracula Sciences? Because, like, if we're talking Dracula Sciences, I think this might have it beat.
No, Dracula's Dracula.
Well, yeah, but
you're
like,
cool. But once you cross the threshold into fantasy, rules don't have to apply properly. Oh. Like, you know, daylight doesn't exist in space.
Look, Geek Scorpio may not appreciate the seriousness of the Dracula Sciences, but we here at GTP, we see you. We appreciate your sacrifices. Thank you for studying Dracula's.
Not vampire sciences, mind you. Dracula sciences. Specifically. Dracula, other vampires, that's a totally different department.
Yeah, we can't help you here. Just Dracula's.
Only Dracula.
No, Dracula's. There's more than one. You would know that if you read my pamphlet.
I need to study more on the Draculas. All I know is most of the episodes of, like, Duckula, which is a retelling of Dracula, but as...
Well, yeah, that's Duck Dracula, obviously.
Oh, by the way, if Duckula has taught me anything... If you don't have original parts to use for your ancient ritual, store-bought will work.
True.
One of the things in that, and it's in the trail, that's not even a spoiler. That's part of the theme song. It's, they need blood, but they grabbed a red bottle, called it a day, turned out it was ketchup, and now now Dracula is now a vegetarian. Once again, you can mix and match your parts.
True.
But... And I don't even know if that was because it's a kid's show or because for funsies, we'll just, you know, put this in there.
Do you think it was to make them a foil to Bugs Bunny? Because Bugs Bunny likes carrots. And if he's eating vegetables, then, you know.
No, not really.
Okay. Well,
ducks are kind of like the same realm of cats. They get animated a lot.
That's true.
And at some point, we're going to do it. A brief history on the anthropomorphic cartoons, and that'll be fun. And then my knowledge of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles will be stomped down for part of that, because that could be the whole episode, because there is two things that thing does, which is maddening.
Oh, and if you don't think we're not bringing up Biker Mice from Mars, or Street Sharks, or... oh my god, there's... Now my knowledges are crossing because my brain's like, say tattooed teenage alien fighters from Beverly Hills. I was like, that's not animals, brain. That's something different.
It's so different. But yeah, I think this is a good part to stop. This is a good stopping part for us anyway for that. There is tons and tons of retellings of different stories. And with newer stories that come out, there are retellings of those as well. How wacky you can get with it and how fun it can be really sort of depends on... I want to say skill or cleverness, because it's easy to retell a story. It's more difficult to retell a story, but changing a good portion of it to make it fit right. It is easy to say, I'm just going to do shot for shot a remake of the play of Dracula. Not, okay, but what if? What if Dracula was in New York City in the 70s and he bit this lady who was also pregnant at that time. And that's how we get Blade.
True. Not even to mention, you know, Jesus Christ, Vampire Hunter. Vampire Slayer? Vampire Hunter. Slayer, I think it is.
Was it Jesus Christ? Because I know there's Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah, Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter. But I believe there's an old B movie. Maybe it's a C movie, to be perfectly real with you all.
It's gone downhill.
Let's see. Jesus Christ. Vampire Hunter. Where the Son of God comes back to modern day to hunt vampires, as one does.
Mm-hmm. You just gotta go hunt vampires. If the 16th president of the United States could do it, why not Jesus?
Sorry, the synopsis is very silly. It's a very serious movie. So good. Go check it out, I guess. Or don't. I'm not your boss.
Oh, man. All right. But yeah, with that being said, our next episode, we're taking a break from podcasting in January. So there's not going to be any new episodes during that, mostly because we need a break. And as you've heard earlier in this episode, we also have a con we're going to as well. But back in February, we're going to go out full form, and we're going to get our groove back and start getting more episodes out there for you guys. With that being said, this is Gaming Theater Podcast logging out. Night, everybody.
Watch out. Bye. For Draculas.
Oh, yeah. Watch out for Draculas. That's a real thing.
Gaming Theater Podcast is hosted, created, produced, and edited by Leo Garcia, the Geek Scorpio. Our music is A Drinking Game. Stock media provided by Stormwave Audio /Pond5. Our cover art is by Adam Parker. You can find him at ParkerGFX on Twitter. If you want to send us some money to help with these episodes, you can do so at patreon.com/gamingtheaterpresents. Want to send support that doesn't hit your wallet? Please leave a review with wherever you hear your podcasts and share our podcast with your friends. It really helps out. Thank you for listening.